are listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon. You're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. I'm your host, Taylor, and today's show is all about housing, getting it, keeping it, fighting for it, and how to protect those who are living without it. So I'm live in the studio with a couple guests. We'll be joined on the phone later by a third. So I'm here with Jeremy Logan, who's a tenant leader with the Tenants Union of Washington, Spokane chapter, and Alfredo Yamedo, who is a social worker and activist in town, who's been doing some work you might have heard about this week with the Sit and Lie ordinance in Spokane. So, hi.
Hello.
Yeah. I don't know which one of y'all we want to start with, but whoever wants to go first, just maybe introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your interest in housing justice, how you came to it, and what you do in that arena.
Okay. Do you want to go first or me?
Go ahead.
I guess it starts with the renters anyways, and
yeah.
ends with the homelessness, hopefully not. But I took interest in the tenants union after both my landlord and the manager of my building were both murdered last December. And Southside Investments came in, bought up the property, and left all of us a note that said that our rent was going to be raised by $475 per month. Mm-hmm. None of us could afford it. A lot of the people were on fixed incomes. And so I called local news that had interviewed me before and talked to them, went to city council with Terry Anderson of the Tenants Union, and Steve Corker and Mike Fagan had stepped up and went and talked to our landlord about making some accommodations and got us up to $2,000 in moving fees paid for and our full deposits back. I believe that part of the reason they were doing that was just because we were in the media like every day. And it was getting a lot of attention on social media and that sort of thing. So really, they were just trying to put out the flames to kind of calm things down so that we weren't getting so much attention.
Yeah, because $475, that was probably a significant, if not like 100% increase for a lot of people, right?
Yeah, it was it was almost double.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thing.
So I was paying $625 before that.
Wow. So now you're just on that train and continuing that kind of organizing.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a leftist my entire life and mostly just a bookworm and that sort of thing and played in bands and did it that way, like vocalized my opinions that way. But I never had the real outlet that the Tenants Union has given me, and it's been really exciting. I really feel it. We could make a difference,
yeah.
As opposed to sitting around reading books, which is what I did for years.
Some combination of the two, right? We our theory and our praxis,
yeah. Right?
Okay, how about you?
Well, I guess my history starts out with homelessness. When I was young, I lost my mother at 11. Didn't care much for my father, so. By the time I was a little over 12, I started running away from home. And I spent most of my adolescence and teens up until I landed in Spokane when I was, 23 for the first time, homeless, on the streets, hopping freight trains, hitchhiking, and just, I've been in every state except for Hawaii. I couldn't figure out how to hitchhike there.
Can't hop a train to
yeah,
Hawaii.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, my heart's always been with people on the street because I've been there. I know what it's like. I've been homeless in Spokane. Right now I'm technically homeless because I am living with my daughter, her husband, and my two grandchildren. So according to the standards used to decide whether someone's homeless or not, I qualify. Everything is connected to housing. When you cannot afford housing, you're homeless. If you're in housing and you lose your housing, you're homeless. We have a situation in Spokane right now where last I checked, we were below 1% vacancy rate in rental housing, one of the lowest in the country. Well, you know, most of the housing that is available, people aren't able to get into. They don't have $2,000 or $3,000 to move into a place. Mm-hmm. They can't show that they make three times their rent. So all these folks are being excluded from housing. Where do they go? They end up on the streets, or they end up living on a relative's couch or in their basement or sharing bedrooms with their grandchildren. All direct result of the issues that we have in housing, specifically the types of issues that the tenants' union works on. Protection for people who are in rental housing, eviction protection, protection against price gouging, mm-hmm. you know, a universalized background check problem. I mean, there's the discrimination comes in a lot of ways, and I saw this firsthand when I worked right down the hall from here at the Northwest Fair Housing Alliance, because we got the phone calls of the issues with people being discriminated against, being evicted for no other reason other than the landlord wants more money for the apartment. If we don't start protecting people from that, we end up with a crisis like we have now, because this crisis is directly related to poverty.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's no, you know, separating them. And poverty, whether people want to believe it or not, is a social construct. It is something that has been created by local, state, and federal governments by ignoring the need of people to have low-income, affordable housing. For over 20 years, this country has ignored it. And now everybody's throwing up their arms, and our elected officials are saying, oh, my God, what happened? Where did this crisis come from? Well, you've been creating it for 20 mm-hmm. years.
Yeah, and it seems like there's, in Spokane specifically, and in a lot of places, there's almost this push from both sides where we're getting folks the new affordable housing, the new housing that was built on the west side of the east side of downtown. The business owners are saying, we don't want that. We don't want a concentration of this. We don't want to see homeless people downtown. That's been the policy of the city with SitLie and other similar stuff. You know, we don't want to see all these homeless people. But then also, from the other side, there's this campaign, there's this push of like, hey, move to Spokane, you can buy two houses, you know. So it's really coming from both sides. I don't know if either of you can speak to like, where does that leave people in the middle?
They want to profit off of the people, but they don't want to see the people that it harms. So in the process, you have like flooded streets. I mean, there's certain sidewalks that if I was, I mean, I don't even want to walk down them alone. And it's not because of, I mean, it's just, it's a mess. It's cluttered, and you can see, just everything is thrown right in your face. Every corner that you drive down, somebody's standing there, and asking, you know, flying a sign, if you just get rid of them and throw rocks down where they're laying down and that sort of thing, like, where are they going to go? If they have nowhere else to go, the next step for them, if you push them out of the city, I mean, the only thing left is death, freezing to death or starving.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, in my opinion, that we've created, language is very important. When the disability rights movement started, one of the key issues was using first-person language. Instead of saying a disabled person, where you take a human being and you label them by a condition, which therefore gives you the opportunity to dehumanize that person. We've done that with homelessness,
mm-hmm.
because I mean, it just flows. I have to catch myself. I do it myself, and I catch myself and then restate it. We are so used to saying homeless people, mm-hmm. the homeless person. Look over there, homeless camp. instead of using first person language where we say a person that is homeless, mm-hmm. people that are homeless. At that point, you're bringing back the humanity in the statement and looking at that person as a human being first and their condition second. That doesn't allow you to dehumanize them. Right now, we dehumanize them. We identify them by the condition, and therefore it allows us to ignore. And, you know, unfortunately, who pays? The people who need the help the most. And, you know, I don't feel bad for the businesses. I really don't, because the proactive approach would have been, you know what, maybe if we put a porta potty and some garbage cans out here, that would help. Maybe if we didn't take out all the benches and water fountains that used to be downtown, maybe that would help. Maybe if we didn't spend $305,000 on a new tank for our police department, maybe that could help. You mentioned the campaign in Seattle, and basically what they said, come to Spokane where you can buy the four-bedroom house and still have enough money left over to go buy the lake home. What kind of message does that send to your most vulnerable population mm-hmm. that needs you the most?
Yeah, it was tone deaf, to say the
exactly.
least. Yeah. So what does this look like in terms of, I guess, from the renter perspective? And I mean, I know as a renter, as a lifelong Spokane renter mm-hmm. myself, what is the pipeline look like? Like, what are the pressures right now? Other than that 1% vacancy that you talked about, that kind of pushed this pipeline along?
Somewhere around 30% of the population of Spokane is considered extremely cost burdened, meaning that they pay 50% or more of their income on their rent. It's the biggest expense in anybody's life. Mm-hmm. Another 50-something percent are considered cost burden, meaning they pay more than 30%, which is the standard range for what somebody should pay for their rent. With rents going up and wages not really going up, I mean, Spokane doesn't have the economy to deal with this. And so you're pushing people to poverty who might not otherwise be impoverished. And then they're more and more vulnerable. When you're paycheck to paycheck, one thing goes wrong. You get laid off or something happens. The next thing you know, you can't pay your rent. Like I said, that's your biggest expense. Or say you can still pay your rent. You lose your car or you can't put gas in the car and you can't get to work. And trying to find a job when you don't have a car, it's an endless cycle. And I've been through it before in my life. And then, okay, so say all of this happens, everything goes wrong, and you get an eviction. Then you can no longer rent from anybody. No one's going to rent to you. Mm-hmm. So you have no options at all except going from couch to couch or living on the street. If you don't have the community around you who are going to allow you to burden them by sleeping on their couch. And it is a burden. It's mm-hmm. tough. It burdens your family even.
Yeah.
You know, an example of what the thought process that is so flawed that I see all the time when it comes to jobs, money in this community was the big brouhaha over Amazon coming to Spokane and building that big, you know, distribution center mm-hmm. out there on the West Plains.
It's a fulfillment center.
The fulfillment center, yeah. It's a fulfillment center for people like Jeff Bezos. It fulfills his pockets even more. These are $15 an hour jobs. I believe I saw an article not more than 2 weeks ago that said in order to afford an apartment, it was 25 or 27.
2250, I think, is usually
an
around.
An hour. Is what you would have to earn to afford the rents that are being charged in this city right now. Last I checked, Amazon pays $15 an hour. How do those jobs, which, mind you, the city and the county poured millions of dollars into the infrastructure needed to support the fulfillment center. How do you justify spending those millions of dollars for $15 an hour jobs that still don't put people where they need to be? So what you have now is you're creating this workforce that, you know, for anyone that's read anything about working at one of these places, it's like slave labor. I mean, they count every minute you're on the floor. They expect you, the moment your 15-minute break is up, you are supposed to be picking at that moment. It's not you take from the lunchroom and walk your way out after most places do. You finish your 15, you walk out the lunchroom, you go back to... No, they expect you on the floor when that 15 is up or that 30 is up.
Yeah. Monitoring bathroom breaks.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
It's gotten to a point where having a job actually lowers your quality of living.
Exactly. So, you know, one of the things that I've been telling city council for a long time, priorities. What your priorities are skewed. And you've lost touch with reality. You've become such a business-oriented entity that you're forgetting the people factor. And I've lived here long enough to know the big boys are gone. Kaiser Meat is gone. All our big manufacturing plants are gone. We're mostly a service industry-driven city. What happens when those folks can't afford to live somewhere? Where are you going to find the people that you need to fill the grand hotels, to fill the Davenport, to work at Amazon? Where are they going to be? We're not like Seattle where they have suburbs to move to. We don't even have bus service to Deer Park, which would be a suburb. You know, I mean, where are they going to go? Who's going to work for you? They're not thinking in that way because they're thinking dollar signs. And it's time for our city council, our mayor, his administration to start realizing that we need to start thinking about people and making investments in people instead of investments in business and trying to attract people from out of town when you're not even taking care of the people that live in town.
Yeah. And on that note of city council and the mayor, tonight, so last week, city council voted yes on the resolution to basically put on this series of tenant conversations.
Right.
And I'm going to take a second. Will you talk about what's going on at city council tonight while I answer the phone for Terry?
Sure.
Thanks.
At city council tonight, they are going to be talking about what happened today. As you know, as far as I know, because of our action we took today. There's supposed to be an announcement, apparently, about one of the warming centers. But most importantly, there's going to be folks there today that are going to be talking about the issues facing, you know, most of the people that are homeless in Spokane. The council has heard this argument over and over and over again. And I believe that they're starting to hear it because they're acting. They acted last week to suspend enforcement of the no sit, no lie. But I think it's important to note that although the council did the right thing, our mayor chose not to do the right thing because he had the first opportunity. So I think it's important that the people in the city, and I'm hearing this, which really encourages me. I'm hearing people coming up to me almost on a daily basis saying, we didn't know. Why is this happening? And those same people are making phone calls. They're sending emails. And that's what we need. We need people to get involved. Get off the armchair. Don't be the armchair social worker. Don't be the armchair activist or advocate. Be the one who makes the phone call. Be the one who sends the email. Yeah. Action works.
Yeah. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. Just got joined on the phone by Terry Anderson, who's the organizer for the Tenants Union in Spokane. Terry, can you hear me okay out there?
Yes, I can.
Yay, and we can hear you. Yes, it's success.
Oh, thank you.
So I've been talking with Jeremy and Alfredo about housing and homelessness stuff, but I'm wondering if you can just introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your work with the Tenants Union and how you got into it.
Yeah, I am. My name's Terry Anderson, and I am the co-executive director for the Tenants Union of Washington State. And I started as an organizer in the Spokane office in 2013. And I was mainly just working in housing preservation work in HUD buildings, but it became very clear even that long ago that Spokane was approaching a real crisis in housing because of the rental vacancy shortage. And so we've really been working with the city and asking the city to do something to protect tenants. We have four tenant clinics. We have a hotline, a statewide hotline, so tenants call us every day telling us situations that are occurring, whether it be rent increases, no cause notices to move, failure to get repairs made, tenants being charged for things that the landlords are responsible for. All of those things really are tied up into our low vacancy rate. And so that's why we've really been looking to the city to pass some local ordinances that will protect tenants so that they can stay in their homes. We have an increase of homelessness, and we believe that the best way to prevent homelessness is to keep people in the homes where they're already living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my apologies. I'm living in 2013 thinking you're the organizer instead of the co-ED, so... Sorry for introducing you wrong.
Well, I still am an organizer.
Well, of course. Just do both. And can you talk a little bit about the proposed, kind of what this suite of protections would look like and what it looks like in some other places? Like, I know Tacoma just passed a pretty impressive, comprehensive tenant protection.
We've been asking the city of Spokane to, first of all, I think the most important thing is to end the drain that's causing no-cause displacement, and those are the 20-day no-cause notices to terminate. When a tenant gets a notice that says that they have to move in 20 days, unfortunately, that's legal under the Washington State Residential Landlord-Tenant Act. And if the tenant can't move in those 20 days, they can be evicted. And we are actually talking to more and more tenants that are actually getting served eviction notices because they cannot find a place to move in those 20 days. And so that's creating a situation where people who have never missed rent, have always paid their rent on time, always been in compliance with their rental agreement, yet they're going to have a eviction on their rental record that's going to make it difficult to find a place to move into. And that isn't fair. Also, those notices are very arbitrary, so tenants can be very fearful to exercise the rights that they do have because they're afraid if they actually exercise a right that they do have under the Landlord-Tenant Act in requesting repairs or requesting repairs in a timely manner, that if they push the issue, that the landlord will just respond by serving them with a 20-day notice. And tenants are so afraid of that that they often will neglect making those reports. But that's kind of a double-edged sword because if a condition deteriorates because the tenant failed to report a repair condition, then the tenant can be charged for that as well. So it's causing a lot of problems for tenants in Spokane.
Terry, can I add? We had a tenant recently that came to us who he had the same landlord that took over my property, actually. So we've had a bit of experience with him. But he reported that there was bed bugs in the building. And the end result was that everybody in the building was kicked out. That was the end result.
And that's not uncommon. The landlord, the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act, and you'll hear landlords respond to what Jeremy just said or what I have been saying by saying, but the Residential Landlord-Tenant Act says landlords can't retaliate. Well, yes, that may be true that the law says that, but it is a burden to prove that it was retaliation is on the tenant, and it's a very difficult thing to prove that it's actual retaliation. And I've talked with tenant attorneys who said they have never seen a judge grant retaliation on an eviction notice. So it's really tough when you because it can cost thousands of dollars to exterminate bed bugs or mice infestations. and it's far cheaper for a landlord to give a 20-day notice rather than pay for those extermination bills and then re-rent to a new tenant, because this vacancy rate is so low that, you know, people are pretty desperate.
Yeah. And, oh, do you want to?
Yeah. You know, I participated in a committee last time around when the city decided, hey, let's look at this, like, let's bring all the stakeholders together. And, you know, I sat on that with Terry, and it became very evident. And at the time, I was still employed at Northwest Fair Housing Alliance, a place where I got to deal with a lot of landlords and tenants who felt they were being discriminated against. And in many cases, they were. The Landlord-Tenant Act leans heavily, heavily towards the landlord. Our landlord association here in Spokane, they are just incredibly zealous in fighting anything and everything. And, you know, one example that I've used, because it's still emblazoned in my head when it happened. We were sitting there, and the then representative of the local landlord association was doing a presentation, and he decided to throw a statement in at the end that said, pretty much, you know, I'm pretty close to exact quote, we should take the bad tenants out back and beat them with a stick. I sat with a pencil in my hand, holding on to it, counting to 10, hoping that Heather Troutman, who was the representative from the city, would step in and say something. No one responded until I responded angrily and said, in the United States, we don't take people out and beat them for anything. But later on, found out that this particular individual worked for a company that had a mining operation in Ghana. And the way that they dealt with the people of Ghana that complained about the working conditions and the pay was they hired a goon squad to go out and beat them with sticks. Now, you know, it may sound like, wow, well, maybe that's one person. But if you take what he said and then look at the actions of the Landlord Association and their overzealousness in defending themselves against everything and anything and not giving an inch towards any of these protections that Terry's and the tenants union have worked so hard towards, it's one-sided. I hope that now they can achieve something, that there's going to be a council member present that hopefully can maintain a fairness in this process, because it's a lopsided process. It leans all one way.
And they really believe that yeah. we as tenants don't know what's best for us, that exactly. we need them to tell us what is good for us. Yeah. And somehow it always profits
well,
them.
My experience, and I want to say, Taylor, I was actually at that meeting that Alfredo was describing, and it was terrible. That was in 2014, and there since has been a task force by the mayor on affordable and quality housing. And, you know, the problem with having task force and sale and stakeholder groups and work groups is that there's an expected outcome. And when the outcome that is, when it's beneficial for landlords to continue with practices as they are, there is no need for change, at least in those two processes. So we never got anywhere. My expectation on this proposal or this resolution that was recently passed by City Council 2 weeks ago, or maybe that was only a week ago.
It was last week,
is
yeah.
that these are forums that are not work groups. They're not stakeholder groups. There's not an expected outcome. We're not trying to actually hammer something out. Because, again, like I say, when that happens, those that want to maintain the status quo can really just interfere, and then there's never an outcome. So my expectation that we will have outcomes, that we will hear stories, that we will have some meaningful changes. I think when I first, I was listening to Alfredo speak about the problems that we were going through with the ordinance to suspend sit and lie, and yet the mayor is in charge of the administrative side of the city. Well, that's still going to be a problem with landlord-tenant protections, because if the council were to pass laws, who enforces them? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of work to do. and I think that one of the things that I would like out of this is really to get tenants participating in this process. And not just in this process, but something that will give them a lasting participation into our democratic process. Because when you look at local city ordinances, we can make a difference. Tenants make up over 50% of the city of Spokane. And yet, as Alfredo described, the laws that are currently in place have really been in place because of landlords who do not make up 50% of the population of our city. So my expectation is that we'll get more participation, more voices will be heard, and that the outcome will be that we move further along. That's what I'm hoping will happen.
Yeah.
But again, and I think it's going to take people to participate. So in case you haven't made this announcement, there are four public forums in which tenants and landlords and advocates and providers and everybody that has an interest in rental housing is invited to participate in these four forums, and they are December 6th, and that one is inviting specifically landlords and housing providers and developers to the meeting on December 6th. On December 12th, that is specifically inviting tenants, tenant advocates, caseworkers, people who are working in the housing field. And on January 8th is open to everybody, all interested parties in the city, neighbors, family members, everybody. And on January 18th, also open to all members. All of these forums are at 5:30 p.m., so we really hope that we get a lot of tenants to come to those forums and that the city council will hear the need directly from the impacted people of the need to have some tenant protections. Specifically, I think, just based on the calls we get to our clinics and our hotlines, the one that's the most disruptive is we need a just cause eviction ordinance that ends these no cause notices and ends 20-day notice and the tenant has to move or they get evicted. That's what's really causing most of the havoc that really renders most protections impossible to maintain because tenants are too afraid to exercise them. So,
and
I'm hoping that these forums will do something.
Yeah, and I'll be sure to post all of those dates that you shared on the Facebook page and also in the notes for the podcast. And if you are just joining us and want to catch the beginning of the show, or if you have to jump out of your car and want to catch the end, you can find the podcast at kyrs.org or at soundcloud.com/praxisradio, praxisradio. So, you guys have been talking about, I'm glad that landlords came up, because I think sometimes when we're talking about issues like this, it's like this invisible perpetrator, you know, who there's just all this poverty, as you were saying. There's just all these problems with renting in Spokane. Is there a pattern to like who the most problematic landlords are? Like, are there categories going on here in Spokane? Is it the big companies like the one that attempted to, you know, double the rent on all of your neighbors, Jeremy, or is it all over the board?
Well, actually, Jeremy, the owner of the building that the person who bought Jeremy's building really would be in Spokane scale, would be considered a small scale landlord. He owns many converted small homes on the South Hill that he's converted into apartments. It's not really one of the larger corporates like Blackstone or the big ones, but for small scale landlords, he's huge. So that's what we deal with in range. You know, some landlords call themselves small scale, and they may only have one or two, but many of these that own single-family dwellings or converted homes into apartments also small-scale landlords. So it's very confusing. But, yeah, I can tell you this. We do have just cause eviction in thousands of tenants in Spokane already have it. And those are tenants who live in public housing, and that's housing that's owned and managed by Spokane Housing Authority. Tenants who live in HUD project-based Section 8 buildings, those tenants have just cause protection, and they only pay 30% of their monthly income on rent. And tenants who live in tax credit buildings. So any building that has any public funding attached to it, all of those tenants have just cause eviction. And that's because we, the public, own and manage those buildings, and we think that it's only right that tenants have just cause protection. Who does not have just cause protection are what we call market rate tenants, and they're the tenants that live in market rate buildings. To make a differentiation in the market rate, who's a, you know, I really resist the whole idea of categorizing landlords into good landlords and bad landlords, because we need to regulate housing for all tenants. And it doesn't matter. If you were to actually do a survey of landlords, my guess is I'd say near 100% would categorize themselves as good landlords, so therefore laws shouldn't apply.
Yeah.
But we don't regulate other entities based on whether you're good or bad. We have laws that regulate, housing because it needs to be regulated. So I really can't say that I would say that small scale do more or less. I know I've talked to a lot of landlords who really do care a lot about their tenants. I've talked to a tenants who've told me that the owner of their building refused to sell when they found out that the buyer was going to raise the rent for the tenant. So I do know that there are landlords that care about their tenants in Spokane. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we don't regulate rental housing because we have good landlords. I couldn't really categorize it other than what I just said.
If you're doing the right thing, then you shouldn't have to worry about it. It's no different than the no sit, no lie law. Now, no sit, no lie is supposed to apply to all citizens.
Mm-hmm.
But we know for a fact that it isn't applied that way. So, you know, hopefully every time you create a law, you know, I'm hoping that legislators create laws in a way, just like tenant protection, that is for everyone. It's straight across the board. Because I agree with Terry. If you start placing labels, then, you know, you're creating an us versus them. And what we're trying to get away from is the us versus them that we've had for so many years between landlords and tenants. So if we create the we situation where all of us are in this together, the tenants are providing the landlords with a living. In turn, the landlords are providing tenants with a safe place to stay, some protections in place to prevent them from being discriminated against or abused as tenants. It's a win-win for both sides. So, you know, hopefully, as Terry said, you know, I trust me, I tenants could have no better advocate than Terry. I hope we come out of this with protections for both, because I think, you know, there are cases where, yes, maybe landlords are abused, but there's far more cases where tenants are abused, and that's what we have to deal with.
Yeah. And if you're just joining us toward the end of the hour here, you're listening to Praxis. I'm talking with Jeremy Logan, Alfredo Yamedo, and Terry Anderson about housing in Spokane, and also the other side of the coin, homelessness in Spokane. It would be great to talk. You just talked about no sit, no lie, and we talked about it long ago on the show when it was first passed into law. Basically, it's a law on the city level that says that it's illegal to sit or lie down on a public sidewalk.
It actually is a designated area that goes from Division to just this side of the Maple Street Bridge and from 4th Avenue all the way to the river.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere within that area, between the hours of 6 a.m. and 12 a.m., you cannot sit or lie within that area. If you sit or lie, you're facing at a maximum penalty of up to $5,000 fine and up to 364 days in jail. No one's been hit with the max, but it doesn't mean they can't apply it. What they do is shuffle people through community court. Now, I have no problem with community court. There are some resources available to folks that are homeless that are positive. But to criminalize an action that is normal to all human beings so you can shuffle them through a court system to get resources, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Because you could be proactive and be out there like some cities are doing with vehicles that provide transportation and say, hey, do you want some help? We can get you to this place where we have these agencies that will help you instead of step in the back of the police car, let me search you, let me make sure you don't have any weapons, and I'm going to take you down to court, and they're going to give you resources.
Mm-hmm. And or the alternate that I think is probably the true intention of the ordinance, to just sweep people out of sight of the downtown core, you know, to say, oh, you want to lay down, go across the river, or go east of Division. Or
exactly. And then you have the situation that we have with the businesses. Now, the House of Charity has been there much longer than any of those new businesses that have opened up around it, mm-hmm. like the wine cellar tasting mm-hmm. place, the gym down the block. These are all recent. Now, I'm not an expert on opening businesses, you know, or starting a new business. But I would say that if you're looking to locate somewhere near downtown and, you know, you're looking for a deal. So you can't tell me that the property around the House of Charity wasn't a deal. Mm-hmm. So these folks took advantage of probably some very low real estate prices or some very low leases and say, hey, we'll locate here and we'll deal with the situation later. So now what have they done? The most recent thing was the petition that all these business, over 100 of them, got together and signed saying, we don't want House of Charity building any more facilities for the homeless. We don't want the homeless on our street corners and our city blocks. Well, were you blind when you moved into that property and bought that property or leased that property? Did you not see one of the largest shelters in the city of Spokane there? So now you expect us to believe that, oh my God, I didn't think it was going to be this bad. Mm-hmm. You know, it's obvious that what they're trying to do is sanitize downtown. Let's move them. So now the police swept the area just prior to the no lie being, you know, unenforceable. And so now you have businesses out on East Sprague that are saying, we're seeing a large presence of people that are homeless out here sleeping around our businesses. Well, where do you expect them to go? Where are they going to go when they sweep them out of East Sprague? Mm-hmm. I say let's put them on buses and take them up to Eagle Ridge.
Well, that's what I was going to say. That's something that Seattle, I believe, had a practice at some point of getting everyone a Greyhound ticket, many to Spokane. So yeah. Does Spokane shuffle everyone out to Ellensburg? You know, like, where does that cycle
exactly end? Where does it end?
Yeah. So I'm wondering if you can talk for a minute about your action this past week in support of suspending. The ordinance is now suspended, as you were saying. Can you talk a little bit about what you did?
Sit and Lie has been around. It was passed about 4 years ago, and then in full enforcement started a little over 3 years ago. I've been fighting the law since the beginning. I have spent countless hours sitting on downtown streets protesting with friends, and we have done everything possible to show our city council, our mayor, that this law is just, you know, it's discriminatory. It uses stereotyping because it identifies a particular sector of society. Nothing. No results. So over the summer, I'm sure a lot of people remember all the prison inmates that went on strike, on a hunger strike, because they were looking for changes in the solitary and confinement rules, meals, phone calls, which were costing them an arm and a leg to speak to family, visitation. So they went on a hunger strike. They got most of what they were seeking. So seeing that, it was in the back of my mind, well, maybe this is what it's going to take to get our city to open its eyes. And so I decided to do a hunger strike. I spent 7 days camped out 24 hours a day at City Hall by the Chase Gallery entrance without eating solid food. You know, I'm not a crazy person. If you don't drink or take some liquid nutrient, you will die within 3 days. Your organs will start shutting down. That was not my purpose. My purpose was to bring attention, to show that sometimes drastic issues require drastic action. The city council watched it for a week before they decided to act. The first action was sending it to the mayor. The mayor decided not to act. City council decided to act in his place. We needed this to happen because even though the law could not be enforced, the police were still rolling up on people who were sitting and lying and using threats on trespassing, disorderly conduct, you know, all kinds of things that you have to have probable cause. At least for trespassing, you have to have a complainant. You have to have somebody calls and say, these folks are trespassing on my property. I need you to come and warn them so they move. None of those things were happening. So they were still targeting individuals. Now we've reached a point where if they decide to target individuals just because they're sitting or lying, they're going to face legal action. It was a hard thing to do. Probably one of the hardest things I've done in my life. I don't want to do it again, but I'm prepared to do it again if I have to. Because, you know, one thing that I got to learn, you know, even though, you know, I went to school to be a social worker and learned all these different practices and procedures and policies that you're supposed to follow, it's kind of hard to ignore a person that's standing in front of you telling you a story about their whole family being put on the street. Or a person coming up to you and telling you, I've been told I'm dying. You know, I have a few months and here I am on the street. Or watching a person with, and I've botched this every time I've described it, a person with Huntington disease, I think they call it, who has just very limited control over their muscular movements, not being able to lay down on the ground and get rest because of their condition. People with just incredible chronic issues and these stories that just rip your heart out. And they're on our streets. But I also saw, which really encouraged my heart, the heart of the city, which I've seen many times over the years, come out and show up. I saw an 82-year-old woman that told me her family's been in Spokane for well over 100 years come out pushing her walker with fresh sandwiches that she made and granola bars to hand out to the folks that were down there. I watched people bring sleeping bag after sleeping bag after sleeping bag, warm clothes, tarps. And I also watched people come and just put a hand on someone and say, how are you today? I care. Listen. And that's the most important thing I think that people need to learn, is that these are our brothers and sisters on the street. They're human beings just like we are, and they deserve the dignity and respect that every human being deserves. And if you just sit and listen to them for a few minutes, if I tell you, if it doesn't melt your heart and make you cry that your fellow human beings are being treated this way, you should just live in a little box insulated from everything, yeah, because honestly, you don't qualify as a human being. Yeah. So my biggest message is stand with people that are homeless. They need our help right now, and show up to city council. even if you don't talk, show up in solidarity and let your council members know, let your mayor know that these are people that we care about. This is our city. And show the rest of the state, instead of doing advertising campaigns to come here,
yeah.
why don't you send that big message that Spokane cares, yeah. Spokane has compassion,
yeah.
Spokane loves.
Yeah, and that's a really good, you preempted my final question for all of you, which is I always want to know what's giving people kind of like hope and like keeping people going and doing this work, which can be really discouraging. So Jeremy and Terry, what's good on the horizon? What keeps you excited about this work?
I'll let Terry go first.
Want me to go first? Okay. Well, first of all, thank you for giving us the opportunity, giving me the opportunity to talk about these things, because this is a conversation that more people need to have. I also want to thank Alfredo for doing what he did, draw attention to how horrible it is on the homeless side. Of the world, and people without shelter are really struggling, and I'm really thankful that you brought that to our attention. I guess I want to say that let's not lose sight of the fact that according to every statistic and according to the Washington State Low Income Housing Alliance, the leading cause of increasing homelessness is rising rents and eviction. And that is a fact. We do our point of time count every year, and increasingly close to 25% of the people report on point in time that the reason they are homeless on that particular night is because they lost their housing due to eviction or fear of eviction. So that isn't hopeful, but that's a fact. I'm thankful that our city council is being led by Kate Burke, who is a tenant. We have one tenant who is an elected official in our city, so she knows firsthand what our tenants are going through. And I'm thankful that we are having a forum. We will have a voice. The lack of data is also one of the biggest barriers to policy. So it's our stories, our data. So the tenants can come tell their stories. That is the data that we need. And more people are coming forward and telling their stories and supporting others. And I really believe that we're ready for change. So thank you.
Yeah, not a whole lot to add to that. It's just the small victories have really helped us keep going. But for me, being able to get everybody in that building money to be able to move to a new place, to be relocated. One of them was a 99-year-old woman who had lived there for 50 years. I'd been there for 5 years, and I was one of the newer tenants in that building. But to see everybody have that relief of, we got 60 days now to move out instead of 20 days or 30 days, and we have some money to actually work with. And that was and then seeing other people, more and more people coming and getting involved with the tenants union, seeing people show up at city council and all of this support. And I talked to a lot of landlords, and according to them, because I'm a painter, I'm a house painter. And so I deal with them all the time. And a lot of them are in support of it because they don't mistreat their tenants, and they do see that tenants need protections because they know the other landlords. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're all part of the landlord association. They know that there's landlords out there that really don't care about the human beings who inhabit their property. It's their property, and it's their ownership, and it's their profits, and that comes before human life. I really think that the entire country is starting to see a transitional phase where people are starting to see that it's more important to put people before profit. And I want more and more people to get involved. And I just think that everybody who is involved should grab a friend and bring them along, somebody that believes what you believe but doesn't get involved. Mm-hmm. And just anybody you can drag somewhere, take them there and get them involved. It's addicting. and it's right, and it'll make a difference.
Yeah.
And we've had all these small victories, and I'd like to see bigger victories. I'd like to see tenants have ownership over the buildings that they live in, to where they pay into it. If they're paying rent to a landlord, they're paying way above market value because they have to pay the profit for the landlord to be willing to make the investment.
Yeah.
And instead of that, you could have lower rents and the money could go back into the building.
Cool. Well, thank you all so much. We're out of time. Somehow it goes by fast. But thank you all
thank
so much
you,
for joining me today. If you missed any of the show, you can
thank
catch
you.
It at soundcloud.com/praxisradio. You can email me with questions or anything like that at praxis, P-R-A-X-I-S at KYRS.org. I've been talking housing with... with Jeremy. No, I was trying to remember your last name. Jeremy Logan. I do know it. Alfredo Yamedo and Terry Anderson by phone. So thanks for listening. And we'll be back next week.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I ain't got no home, I'm just a roaming round. Just a wandering worker, I go from town to town. And the police make it hard wherever I may go. And I ain't got no home in this world anymore.